is First Friday Somewhere.
That's a big sense of freedom.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, with that, let's head out on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Our old buddy Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, BTN, joining us. Mike, thanks for the time. James and I were discussing some of the Brett McMurphy stuff in the stadium story of athletic directors. As we understand now the full importance of football, and we've lost much of our basketball revenue, obviously, with the tournament being canceled, and the idea of, well, we got to find a way to fit football in, or we're going to have a tough time paying bills, and we're going to take a hit anyway because it's hard to imagine it being done in front of fans, my view, not those of the athletic departments, but I'm sure they're considering it. You've been covering college athletics for a very, very long time. You understand the economics of it. A non-football season year, how's that possible? And as we stand right now on April 2nd, what's the best way to go about it?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say is that I think it's premature to discuss, not for Gene Smith and people in that position and the people around those people. They have to discuss every eventuality. They're business people. They need to know, okay, if X happens, what does that mean for Y? But I think it's premature to really know what's going to come about in this fall. I mean, we still don't know what's going to come about next week. We don't know whether or not the NBA, NHL, MLB, MLS will be able to resume or start their seasons in the case of MLB. So I think it's premature to discuss what the – you know, whether or not there will be a college football season. And if so, whether or not there would be fans in the stands and all those sorts of things. Because remember, if we don't have college football, we probably don't have college. I mean, other than online learning. Yeah. I mean, so I think that there's some people that are so eager to just wipe everything off the map and leave it at that because – it makes them look important and centered and that they have everything in perspective. And I believe that it's very important that, if possible, that we have college football again, because it means businesses are open and schools are back in session. And I don't think anybody wants this to last for 5 months if we can avoid it. So I would say that let's just, you know, pump the brakes on whether or not we're going to have college football until we get through the month of April and see where we all are. And you know, hopefully, God willing, this virus will be under control here and elsewhere around the world.
Yeah, Mike, with Iowa State's athletic director cutting, basically withholding bonuses and cutting salaries, what to save, I think $3 million, the article said. How much more do you expect this kind of to happen around just college athletics? And do you think this is going to force schools to kind of reevaluate how much margin they have to build? I mean, no one really saw all these things getting canceled, right, as far as a pandemic happening. But it seems to me that a lot of these universities haven't really built in margin for an event like this, with Iowa State being the first school to really cut back.
Yeah, I think that says a lot about how one runs one's business. To expect that there would never be any sort of calamity. I mean, you have to expect things like that. What if a tornado hits your campus and wipes out your football stadium? I mean, I think those kinds of things can happen. So you always have to build that in. And I don't think that in a lot of cases colleges have been wise about – no, and this is a very broad statement because there are a lot that have been very smart about this stuff. But in general, colleges haven't been particularly wise. But part of that, though, is the mission. You're a nonprofit. You can't be banking like millions and millions of dollars if year after year after year. If you're a nonprofit, then you're not a nonprofit anymore. So that's part of, you know, that's part of the problem. And the same goes for colleges. And the colleges, of course, have their endowments, but I don't know that there are many athletic departments that are operating that way, because, again, I think that would be it would be difficult to maintain the situation as you are now, saying we can't pay and all that sort of stuff, if you were, as I said, building up huge stores of money.
Mike, let's. I was going to say have a little fun, but honestly, it makes me sad too because last weekend was my favorite weekend of the calendar. I love the Sweet 16 to the Elite Eight. I love the idea of four teams getting to cut down nets and go to a Final Four. And you've covered a ton of these from a regional final perspective and what those things mean. And I think we were headed for one of the most wide open NCAA tournaments of all time. I don't know if I mean Kansas had kind of separated towards the end, but it felt like anybody could win this thing. We had one last year that was like this. If you were able to jump in a time machine and go back to the start of this tournament and try to project what it would have looked like, what's your best guess on what we'd have seen over these 3 weeks?
Well, you know, I had a lot of the bracket analysts had Kansas in Indianapolis in the Midwest, but I had done some sleuthing and discovered that Kansas's preference was always to be in the South. So they would have been in Houston, and I think they would have gotten out of Houston in part because they were smart enough to say, hey, okay, it's a couple hundred, like I think it's like 300 miles difference in terms of the distance to Houston as opposed to Indianapolis. And they were smart enough to say, okay, so we go to Indy, and maybe Louisville's there, and they bring 10,000 people, or maybe Kentucky's there, and they bring 30,000 people, or maybe Butler's there, and the whole city full of neutrals who bought tickets to be in Indy, you know, all of a sudden turns into Butler Blue like they did in 2010. So we don't want any part of that scene. Let's go to Houston where we don't have to worry much about that stuff. Yeah. So I think they would have come out of there. Dayton would have been here in the Midwest as the number one seed, and it would have been a real challenge for them. And I do think I'm going to say Kentucky would have gotten placed here, and I think they would have had an enormous crowd. And also they have an excellent team. And the guard play advantage they would have had, I think they would have gotten out of there. Villanova in the East, they just were shooting the basketball so well and had such a good formula. And I believe that they would have had a huge crowd at Madison Square Garden, and they would have gotten out of there. And then in the West, I always liked Gonzaga's team, and I think them being the number one seed there with San Diego State as the number two, I think that that was a pretty good set up for Gonzaga. So those would have been nice. You know, those are my imaginary Final Four as I projected the bracket and who I think would have gotten out.
Mike, with the Washington Post doing their simulation, all right, this is not biased. They said Ohio State would have won the tournament. Do you think that they should just put a banner up? You know, Washington Post simulated champs, Ohio State Buckeyes.
They said Ohio State would have won. That's a fascinating call. I'm not sure how that, you know, what the computer spit out. I'm sure they must have put in Chris Holtman is a great coach, which he is, and that's what it spit out. I didn't see that coming, but, you know,
look,
that's
we got UCF. UCF is self-proclaimed national champs a couple of years ago in football. I'm just saying we could at least put Washington Post simulation
in
very
man.
Small font underneath, you know?
You can. You know, I mean, I talked about this in regards to Rutgers. I wrote a piece. I talked to Steve Peichel after the season, and you know they have not been in the NCAA tournament since 1991, and they went into the last week of the Big Ten regular season at 9-9 with a home game against Maryland, top 10 team, and a road trip to Purdue, which had won nearly every home game, and the ones that won, they wrecked Virginia, wrecked Michigan State, wrecked Iowa, all top 25 teams. And so they went in and they beat Maryland at home and then won on the road at Purdue, and they were going to get in. And now they have nothing to say, look what we did. And that's true for so many teams. I mean, Dayton right down the road from you guys, one of the four best teams in the history of the Atlantic 10 Conference. The Atlantic 10 started when I was in high school, so I know that league. And I covered it for 2 years when I was in Pittsburgh. And so I know that league really well. And they were one of the four best teams in the history of that league. But the best team in the history of that league went to the Final Four, UMass, in 96. And then you had St. Joe's 27-0 in 2004, missed the Final Four by a buzzer shot, and Temple, which lost to Duke in the regional final. So I think the Dayton would have gone a long way, and they don't have anything other than their conference regular season to show for it. I feel bad for all those teams. And the Buckeyes were a team that had obviously had a great season and a chance to – go into Indy here in Indy and maybe win the conference tournament and maybe go on and do what the Washington Post said they were going to do.
Mike, I'll get you out of here on this one. Are you watching any of these old tournament games that are being re-aired across the platforms? You find yourself getting back into any of these games? You're probably at a lot of them.
Yeah, so I like the first one was the Duke Kentucky game from 1992, and I knew where I sat, and I was watching, and I found myself, so I tweeted out a picture of what I looked like in 1992.
There you go.
And then I found myself, like, as soon as I turned on the Auburn Virginia game, I caught the end of it, and like the first thing I saw when I turned it on was there was this loose ball right in front of me and Andy Staples and Mike LaPresti. And so I just tweeted out a picture. I said, "What happened to this guy in 27 years, man? He went really downhill." But I've been watching a little. And the other thing I've been doing is I've been watching them on my own for a series that I call Missing March Madness, about games that I'd actually missed the first time around for various reasons.
Oh, cool.
And one of them, the most recent one, the reason I missed it was because I was covering Cincinnati Bearcats then, and I was coming back, I think, from Boise or something like that. I'd been away a bunch. And so I told my wife, okay, I'll just tape this Kentucky-Duke game, and then we'll go to dinner, and then I'll watch it when we come back. It'll be fine. If I don't know the score, I don't care, right? So we go to dinner, and we picked this restaurant in Cincinnati called Deshaies. And what I didn't think about at the time was that Deshaies' main location was in Lexington. So when they came back from 17 points down to beat Duke in the regional final and get to the Final Four, the people, like the waitress, came up, "Oh, Kentucky just beat Duke." And I'm like, "You ruined my night. How could you do that?"
Even back in those days. Good talking to you, Mike, as always, buddy. Stay safe, and thanks for the perspective. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys.